The 100 Years' War, the Crecy Period, failed French winter relief of Calais. 10 days after the Scottish disaster at Neville's Cross, the plans of King Philip VI to relieve Calais before winter collapsed, and collapsed in humiliating confusion. The response of the French military class to the king's request was poor and late. Hardly any troops summoned to meet at Compiègne had arrived by the official muster date, which was October the 1st, 1346. Then, as the days passed, news arrived of the successes of the Earl of Lancaster. Well, the French ministers probably overestimated Lancaster's strength, and their first panicked impression was that he was heading north. They believed that the English actually had a grand strategy, attacking the French army now from two sides at once. Now a series of panic-stricken decisions was made at Compiègne. On October the 13th, the Duke of Normandy announced he would lead a fresh army against Lancaster at the end of the month. Part of this army would be made by drawing men that had joined the muster from Compiègne back. The rest of the troops would come from new military summonses. The summonses called for all available men who were not already on their way to Compiègne. They would now proceed to Orléans, where the Dauphin would meet them. The plan he had was to hold the Anglo-Gascon army south of the Loire River in the Tournai, where the main routes from the southwest would converge. This caused a renewed dislocation of the French government's recruiting, especially when the English army under Lancaster changed directions and turned south. That led to the muster that had been called for Orléans being canceled. So in the last 10 days in October, men arriving at Orléans were now simply told to march north to Compiègne. At the end of October of 1346, there were a little over 3,000 men-at-arms in Compiègne. To these, you could add the troops redirected from Orléans and the French forces deployed in the garrisons that were ringed around the marshes of Calais, giving Philip VI between 6,000 and 10,000 men, but that included infantry. But despite the desperate lengths to which Philip's officials had resorted, the war treasurers did not have enough money to pay advances to even this small, modest army. When Philip VI saw that his relief campaign was about to collapse, he tried face-saving diplomacy. Philip authorized an approach to Edward III through Charles of Bohemia. Well, Edward rejected that completely out of hand. Then Philip tried the Pope's cardinals. He told them he was willing to appoint ambassadors to negotiate, but it was too late. He had been persuaded to appoint ambassadors, but while his clerks were barely beyond the state of drawing up formal documents, when on October the 27th, 1346, Philip just ended all naval and military operations in the north of France, except for the defense of the principal garrison towns. Troops at Compiègne were now dispersed, and new arrivals were turned away. Genoese war galleys were now laid up at Abbeville on October the 31st, and a week later, all the French galleys were done. This, of course, is a signal for a political crisis within the French government that's going to be similar in ways as to what happened in England after Edward III ended the Tournai campaign in 1340. Now, of course, part of this, I mean, it's really bizarre. You remember we were going through this, and you have John and his army trying to take the town of Aiguillon, and he sat there and he sat there and he sat there forever, and finally had to be forced to give up the siege and come and join his father to deal with the English. Well, then he never gets there in time to join the Battle of Crecy, and just disbands his army. And then Philip disbands his army as well after Crecy or whatever was left of it. And then very shortly, then you suddenly, oh, I need a new army. I mean, if the gentleman had just simply held on to those troops for a little longer and paid them as they were, this would not have taken place. There would have been plenty of men, but that did not happen. And you can imagine what it was like to be a member of the French military elite. All right, you've been called, you've been let go, you've joined your army, you've been sent home, you've been recalled, you show up, and they send you home again. It's going to cause problems down the line later on as well. Well, back to this political crisis, because the French government did, in many ways, did the same thing that happened in England after Edward III, as I said before, ended the Tournai campaign. Philip, like Edward, blamed his advisors and others. Gadamer de Fay and the Marshal Charles de Montmorency, they were dismissed. Philip then dealt harshly with his financial officers, who were blamed for the debacle at Compiègne because they didn't get their money back. It didn't raise it fast enough. Well, we've looted a lot of towns, burned a lot of churches. There's a lot of money missing in this area, so it's going to be hard to find. And of course, Philip just didn't understand that the failure to produce money when it was needed could be due to anything other than incompetence or corruption. So Pierre de Sartz, one of the main officers of the Chambre des Comptes, which is their money collection group, a man who had actually been the center of the French government for 20 plus years, was not only dismissed from his job, but was arrested. He was charged in the most imprecise counts of embezzlement of 100,000 livres de Tournai. On November the 11th, 1346, the entire financial affairs of the French government were placed in the hands of three commissioners, abbots from Saint-Denis, Montmontier, and Corbeil. Now, they not only inaugurated a rigid regime for controlling expenditures, but they conducted a purge of the financial administration, dismissing large numbers of civil servants, great and small, and then even prosecuting some of them. So we take an organization that's not been really well known for being well organized, but no one's tax collecting efforts at this time are that well organized anyway. Now you're going to remove the people who had experience and replace them with what? Begging monks? This is just going to make it worse, as you can imagine. And so yet and we're not quite done in the fact that now Philip looks at his Privy Council, which is the same individuals that have been in power, and none of them are getting fired. However, they are all divided, pointing the fingers at one another. Circumstantial evidence indicated that Philip had a big falling out with his son, the Duke of Normandy, over not only his failure to take Aiguillon, and not to leave it fast enough, but failing to arrive in time for the Battle of Crecy, which actually turns out to be a good thing, because that might have been the end of the Duke of Normandy. I can't imagine him not charging at some point, and they would have mowed him down, and we would have lost all of those troops as well, and really, the king's only heir. Well, there was even a concern amongst the Duke's people that he might get disinherited, and that's highly unlikely. But relationships between Philip VI and the Duke of Burgundy, which is Duke John's father-in-law, they weren't cold. They're absolutely glacial. You see, Artois is a little small area which the Duke of Normandy governed on behalf of his wife. Now, that became a principal theater of the war, because that's where, you know, Calais is located. And there are constitutional niceties in this area because it actually should have been part of the Holy Roman Empire, but it always been French in language and custom and culture. So it's one of those quasi places. Well, that prevented Philip, the King of France, from exercising direct power, and it was frustrating for him. And then when he began giving out edicts, the local officials just basically ignored them. They even went as far as in the March of Calais to not only not pay any attention to what Philip wants to do, but they even appointed their own officials in the main towns throughout the hinterland. Then finally, in December of 1346, Philip VI suspended his son's government in Artois and began dismissing large numbers of his officials. So as you can see, France is in severe turmoil, and the people in Calais are basically screwed for quite some time. But this will go on a little bit further. Now, the sources for this, pretty much the same ones that I've been using. The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylands, and Volume 1 of The Trial by Battle by Sumption of the Hundred Years' War. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and thank you very much.